Mrs. Thatcher, Colonel Oliver North, when he testified at the Iran-Contra hearings, said that because of the hearings, the United States was becoming a laughingstock around the world. And he also said that our allies would be wary of helping us in the future because we were airing this so much in public. Do you get that impression, too?
The United States will never become a laughingstock. We know just how much we owe to the United States. We owed it immediately after the last war in the generosity of the Marshall Plan. We owed it during the last war as she came to liberate countries in Europe from the tyranny under which they had been. We know how much we owe to the United States. Sometimes we don't always show it. I try to. But we're very much aware of this debt. Now, I think there is a problem in the sense that once you're trying to discuss every single tiny little thing that happened, one simply has to recognize that you can't carry on the business of government unless some things are confidential. And if you damage that, then it does make it more difficult, perhaps, to talk as freely as one otherwise would.
So do you think, I know in your country you don't expose these kinds of investigations to the public, you have a law against that. Is it it is damaging us. We see these polls.
Let me put it this way. I answer questions twice a week in the House of Commons, and that's pretty searching. And it's not always the most courteous of operations or things, so I'm pretty used to it. But there are times when I'm asked about certain things when I simply will get up and say, no, that's a confidential communication between governments, and it is customary that we do not reveal these. And if we did, there wouldn't be any. Or they will ask me about certain armaments orders, and those too are confidential. Everyone understands that. So I have to withstand this questioning. But it is part of the way in which we do our work that certain things are and must be confidential. And I think, I tell you who does understand that, the ordinary public understand it. They understand it very well.
Let me ask you, though, about the question of trust. I've read a report in all these hearings that Mr. Poindexter, who's testifying this week, went to the man who is now your British ambassador to the United States and assured him way back that the United States was making no deals to get our hostages out on the very day that McFarlane and Oliver North were in Tehran with a plane load of weapons to trade hostages. What about trust?
You are inviting me to comment on detailed matters which are of use concern to the United States and involved in these hearings. I won't do it.
No,
and it would be discourteous of me to do so. And it would be quite wrong. And you may go on asking the same question in 100 different ways, and you will still get the same answer. Still get the same answer. We can continue to conduct our friendship between ourselves and the United States, and we can continue to conduct our business.
I know you've said everybody remembers us from World War II, but we don't have that impression. We have an impression that that was 30 years ago, and it's another world now. And we get reports of polls in which our credibility's been damaged, our influence weakened.
Look, we're all part of NATO. The great alliance is NATO. We're staunch allies, so is the United States, so are we in NATO. We're dealing with things, we're dealing with leaders who understand the big issues and who are not going to be sidetracked from the big issues. The big issues are the defense of freedom, the alliance with the United States. Don't forget, it's not merely only the last war, the Marshall Plan. After President Reagan had met Mr. Gorbachev in Geneva for the first time, he came and he said, look, I would like to come and tell NATO. Everyone turned up, everyone supported him. Then he came back immediately to the United States Congress. This kind of relationship still exists. The NATO organization is in Europe. There are 330,000 American servicemen right on the frontier of freedom. We from Britain have 66,000 of our servicemen right on that frontier. In Germany. We're doing the same job. We're defending freedom. When the president wants to get our view of how the armaments negotiations should be conducted and what we should agree to. There's extensive consultation. It works. Yes, of course you get some irritable remarks now and then. Don't you in every family? Don't you when you have a close family relationship say some things which just are said just in a moment's anger and they don't mean anything more than that? That's the kind of relationship. Let me use this to say thank you to the people of the United States. This country, which is the flagship of freedom. And the only thing we say is please don't amidst all this forget the really big issues. And the president certainly isn't, because we need the leadership of the United States. And we are returning to the concentration on the East-West, on the arms control talks. The president's been very active in dealing, helping to deal with that situation in South Korea, very active in matters in the Gulf, very active in East-West.
Okay, East-West. The Soviets, our government tells us, are dragging their feet in Geneva. We're told that the prospects for a summit between President Reagan and Mr. Gorbachev this year, which everyone was hoping for, is fading away. There is some sense that the Iran-Contra hearings have given the Soviets an impression that Mr. Reagan is weakened, and they're trying to take advantage of that. Why do you think these talks have turned sour?
But I don't think they have turned sour. These issues are very complicated. You can get a general outline agreement, namely that yes, we all agree that the intermediate nuclear weapon should go, but even that's not absolutely complete because we'd like them to go worldwide. The Soviets said no, they want to keep 100, and the United States keep 100. That gives you enormous problems of how to verify that there are only 100 being kept and the others are being destroyed. If you're going to get the first arms reduction agreement, you've got to make certain that it will stick and that you can check it at every single stage. You've got to get it right.
Mr. Shevardnadze was expected to come here this week to iron out those details. He is not coming. The American government has put out the word very forcefully that they are dragging their feet. It doesn't seem to be final details. It seems that the Soviets are trying to stall on us.
I think you're probably getting a certain amount of brinkmanship. You do in many, many negotiations. I think the Soviet Union wants an agreement, and I think the United States would like an agreement, but you've got to have an agreement that is sure in your defense and which does not jeopardize your defense. You've got to get it right, and you've got to be able to check it at every single point. So don't be pessimistic. I believe it will come about, but I want it right.
What did you tell the president? Did you give him any advice on how to get this back on track?
I said what I told the president when I gave a statement outside. America is the flagship of liberty. These negotiations are extremely important. We've got to get them right. Get it right. Don't go for a quick settlement. Get it right.
Mrs. Thatcher, the British press wrote before you came here that you were coming to bolster the president, to help improve his image and to buck him up, improve his spirits. You know, I must say, from all the interviews you've been giving, that they seem to have been right. Is that why you came and what you're hoping to do?
This is the beginning of my third term. That is something an American president doesn't have. I have. I'm very fortunate. And of course, after I had been immediately to the European Council in Europe, I come to our greatest ally, the United States. I come because there are big issues to discuss, and I come because I think Britain has a contribution to make. But I come as a staunch ally and a loyal friend at all times. Yes, that's why I came, because I want to make a contribution, and I want to demonstrate our alliance and our friendship.
Are you saddened at all by what has happened?
No, I think you're taking far too downbeat a view. Now, why are all you media taking a downbeat view? Cheer up. America's a strong country with a great present, a great people, and a great future.
Lighten up. Is that what you're telling us?
Cheer up. Be more upbeat.
Well, I must say, I mean, that you are being a cheerleader about it, but we do hear that our influence has been greatly damaged. We hear that our credibility's been shredded. We hear that we have to take extraordinary steps to prove ourselves to the moderate Arab states. We have to reflag ships.
But why are you doing your level best to put the worst foot forward? Why? America is a great country. She's a strong economy. She's a remarkably strong economy. She's a people who are enterprising, self-reliant. Even during this difficult period, and it must have been a difficult period, the president's handled the South Korea matter. For the first time in Security Council, the five permanent members are getting together to try to bring about a ceasefire in Iran, Iraq. We're talking about possible initiatives in the Middle East. He's taken a tremendous initiative in GATT on a great problem at the moment about agricultural surpluses. This isn't a story of a person who's being deflected by one particular problem from dealing with the great matters which affect the world. We have trade problems going on, and we have a great deal to say about that. We want the world opened up to trade. This business is continuing. I beg of you, you should have as much faith in America as I have.
Did you talk to the president that way? Did you tell him to lighten up?
No, we talked about the issues, the great issues.
Was he down?
Well, the president's fine. The president's fine. He's president of the United States.
Is he in a good mood?
Yes.
Okay. We have run out of time.
Aren't you pleased?
I am pleased.
Delighted.
Thank you.
Thank you.